Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire is hosted by participants attending the Grassroots Radio Conference, hosted by WCAALP 107.3 FM in Albany, New York, broadcasting from the territory of the Mohawk and Algonquin people. In this episode,
why were people not on the streets? Why were we silent? Why was the world looking the other way? And he said to me, this is a lesson for you.
And we're definitely committed to staying here until they get fish farms out of our territory.
But first, here are the headlines.
CKUT's Amanla Radio files this headline with Mustafa Hanaway, reporting from a protest held on October 1st in Montreal by Guinean refugees fighting against their deportation.
We're here today to support and stand in solidarity with a group of Guinean refugees who've been fighting against their deportation back to Guinea, and with their own committee, the Guinean Committee for Status. It's very clear that the situation in Guinea as a country, as a state, despite its transition to democracy, is still tarnished with violence against those who are taking to the streets, who are protesting in Guinea for a better life. Guinea as a country, and this is reminiscent, this is very much the same as other countries that have become completely dependent on resource extraction as the main engine of their economy, still dependent to their old colonies or to countries like Canada. So it's clear that our country, our government, our state has a responsibility to not deport Guinean refugees, because Canada's profited and directly implicated in sort of the underdevelopment of Guinea.
Our next headline comes from Michael Welch of the radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on the occupied territory of the Anishinaabe and the homeland of the Red River Métis.
150 striking employees at Winnipeg's James Armstrong Richardson International Airport are finally returning to work after spending more than 2 months on the picket line. The personnel, which included IT workers, labor, duty managers, administrative workers, airfield maintenance, and various tradespeople who work at the airport, began their air action at 3 a.m. on Monday, July 24th, after negotiations with the airport's authority fell apart. The strikers were all members of the Public Service Alliance of Canada, or the Union of Canadian Transportation Employees, Local 5600. According to early PCAC press releases in July and August, it was the employers contracting out of work to the lowest bidder that proved to be the biggest concern for those on the picket line. According to Marianne Ladun, PSAC Regional Executive Vice President for the Prairies Region, the Winnipeg Airport Authority's policy is not only unfair to workers, but puts the safety of the traveling public at risk. More recent press releases from the union announcing the end of the strike have so far given no indication that this aspect of the impasse between the employees and the WAA has been resolved. The impact of the strike had been hobbled when a court-ordered injunction sought by the WAA in the first week of the strike restricted the number of picketers in a given area and only in designated places. As reported by journalist James Wilt of Rank and File, the injunction even restricted the use of the word scab on the picket line, conflating it with the use of racist and sexist language. The new collective agreement, deemed fair by Ladun in an October 4th press release, does indicate a 10% salary increase over 4 years, the provision of a healthcare spending account, and increases to the overtime meal rate and standby pay.
Thanks to CKUW for that headline.
We'll be right back. On September 28th, wild salmon protectors and their supporters occupied the constituency office of British Columbia's agricultural minister, Lana Popham. Protectors spoke about the experiences of their people at the demise of traditional salmon food resources from pollution, overfishing, and fish farms. The message for the minister was clear: communities are running out of salmon to eat. Chris Cook from Guerrilla Radio at CFUV Victoria was at the action and brings us the following report. First, he spoke with Hereditary Chief Eric Pelkey, followed by a phone address from Melina Dawson. Melina was calling from the front lines of a direct action at a Midsummer Island fish farm.
There's an occupation of Agriculture Minister Lana Popham's office going on right now. It has to do with the fish farms in this province and the fish farm occupations that are going on up in Alert Bay and beyond. I'm going to see what's going on. I'm in the office now. See if I can talk to somebody. What is happening? Why are you here today?
Well, we're here to get the voice of the government, or get the ear of the government, to protest the fish farms in our territories here on the coast. We feel it's not only an attack on salmon, but an attack on our people, because the salmon are the food of our people. You know, I lost a sister a few years back, and what the doctors told us was that she suffered from a lack of fish in her life, in her food, that it caused irreversible liver damage, because her body was so used to salmon. That's been passed on through the history of our people.
Let's make some noise for Shauna.
When it's built into our DNA that we need fish to live, and now that fish is being depleted, and our people are becoming sicker and sicker from it, and as a result, I myself have lost my sister as a result of that.
And the fish farms, how are they responsible for the diminishing availability of wild salmon?
Well, I think that we all know, and we've all heard, that fish farms poison the environment for the fish, and they've been establishing these fish farms right on the migratory routes of our salmon. So it really poisons them as they go through. It passes on diseases to them, and really poisons the whole environment that the fish pass through. So you know, we feel that it's killing our salmon, killing our wild salmon, and not only salmon, but the other fish in it that are in our territory too.
So we've got a live hookup coming in from the occupation of one of the fish farms up in Alert Bay.
So everybody, let's welcome Melina Dawson. So if you felt like telling us how things are going at the Midsummer Occupation, we would love to hear.
We're getting pretty well set up now, and we've had a lot of really committed people come out. A few of us were feeling pretty rattled after yesterday, but I think we're good now, and we're definitely committed to staying here until they get fish farms out of our territory.
Million, you want to tell us what happened yesterday?
Yesterday, me, Julia, and Lindsay were just, you know, enjoying a morning cup of coffee or tea in our kitchen there. And I think one of us looked outside, I think it was Julia, and, you know, noticed a whole bunch of Marine Harvest employees coming.
Marching
towards us and our house. And then they started cutting down a sign that was gifted to us for the occupation here.
Do you have any message you might want to convey to the NDP government, to Lana Popham, who issues the licenses for those fish farms?
Don't renew them. Don't change them and then renew them. Just revoke them.
So as they're saying, there's 50, I'd say that's a conservative number of people sitting in the minister's office right now. She's away at the municipalities, the BC municipalities meetings on the mainland. They're trying to get through to her by phone. The NDP likes to fashion itself as being sympathetic. Now they're in government, they're going to have to make some hard decisions whether they're going to follow up their rhetoric with action.
Thanks to CFUV for that report.
Our next feature comes from CKUW. Several reports of racist incidents in Manitoba in the late summer have had residents concerned and galvanized anti-racist activists to take to the streets. Following feature by CKUW's Michael Welch profiles local survivors, stories of racism, and some of the local strategies for restoring a spirit of welcome and inclusion in the city once dubbed as arguably Canada's most racist city in the pages of Maclean's magazine.
Sometimes even if, you know, at workplace, they come, the younger generation, the younger people, and they will ask you a change. If you said, no, I don't have it, some of them, they will say, go back to your country. Nigger, why are you here? This is our country, go back. It's common.
That was Ali Said, businessman, refugee advocate, and emigre from Ethiopia, recalling instances of racism at his store in Winnipeg. Incidents of harassment and threats against Muslims and people of color have been making headlines in Winnipeg. In August, a teacher visiting from Calgary was subjected to a racial attack when asking directions in the community of Seven Sisters Falls, just outside of Winnipeg, as captured in the following audio, recorded and distributed on Facebook. A warning, sensitive listeners may find this material disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm a Nazi!
You are being racist!
You know what a Nazi
is? You shouldn't do that to me!
Fuck you, too!
You shouldn't do that to me!
Take your head towel off in the country, then!
Yeah, why should I take it off?
Take it off!
Why should I take it off?
It supports Muslims!
I can race any way I want!
It supports Muslims!
It doesn't matter!
Muslims and blacks are not alone. Anti-Semitic graffiti has become more noticeable in Winnipeg. Community members like Belle Jarniewski are concerned that anti-Semitism is becoming normalized, as she expressed at an anti-racism event at the University of Winnipeg on September 9th.
I met with one of the survivors. He was at the refit center. And a man turned to him and said, where are you from? And he said, I'm from Poland. And he said, you know, it's really too bad that Hitler didn't finish off all the Jews. And he said, you know what, but I'm a Jew. And he said, no, you're not, you're Polish. And he said, no, I'm a Polish Jew. I'm a Holocaust survivor. And he looked straight at him and he said, well, I hope the Canadian neo-Nazis finish off what Hitler didn't succeed at.
Helmut Harry Lowen is a retired sociology professor from the University of Winnipeg. He spent decades studying racism and hate groups. He concedes these groups are on the rise, but points out that historically, it is paramount that groups promoting intolerance be denied platforms in the public arena.
Every time a hate group tried to get organized or tried to mount a public provocation, each time we were able to shut them down. That continues a tradition that began at Old Market Square in 1934 when the Anti-Fascist League engaged in combat with the Nazis of the day, the Nationalist Party. And from that June day forward in 1934, no fascist group has marched publicly in the city of Winnipeg. So that's a long tradition from the 1930s. These are stories, part of the subterranean anti-fascist history here, which the elite historians and the bourgeois politicians would like us to forget.
Shahina Siddiqui is the executive director of the Islamic Social Services Association of Winnipeg. At a September 9th rally that she helped organize, she spoke to the issue of how to confront the racism in our city.
I remember a long time ago when I was a teenager asking my father when I heard and started to learn about the Holocaust and said, why were people not on the streets? Why were we silent? Why was the world looking the other way? And he said to me, this is a lesson for you, that you never look away. I expect you to speak against Islamophobia because that's your job. I will plainly speak for humanity, which today finds itself at odds with people who would like to take it away. Thank you.
Whatever the extent of the racism problem in Winnipeg may be, dialogue with community members of goodwill can at least be a start to resolving the situation. On Sunday, October 15th, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Centre Culturel Franco-Manitobain, the Islamic Social Service Association will be hosting a multicultural tea fest, which it presents as an opportunity to dialogue and share with family about different cultures that celebrate conversation, ceremony, and friendship around tea. More information is available at issacanada.com. From Winnipeg on the occupied territory of the Anishinaabe peoples and the homeland of the Métis Nations, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Thanks to CKUW for contributing that report.
Our last feature comes from CKUT on a recent gathering held at the U.S.-Canada border in Lacolle, Quebec, to welcome refugees and migrants. Participants were determined to oppose Storm Alliance, a far-right, racist, anti-immigrant organization that called for demonstration at the border that day.
We're here at a counter-protest to a protest that has been, an action that has been organized by Storm Alliance. So they're behind us. On the other side are cop cars and the action that has been organized to demonstrate solidarity and welcome for migrants and refugees.
And from your perspective, how is the action going so far today?
It's going well. I feel like it's a very festive environment for us in terms of the action that we've organized, and it's an opportunity for us to get our message across that we oppose racism, that we want open borders, and that we welcome refugees and migrants. So they came here today to intimidate refugees and migrants, and we're saying that we won't let that happen. So we have come here to visit the border multiple times. We have interacted with people coming here as refugee claimants to share a message of welcome. There has been public education that has been done in these communities that are close to the border to share more information about what's going on so that people are well informed and to challenge any ideas that might be kind of put out there by groups like Storm Alliance and mainstream media that refugees or migrants might pose a threat. We don't agree with that.
My name is Wendy Ayotte. I live in Havelock, near the border with the United States. Well, we're here today because a group called Storm Alliance, which is variously described as an ultra-nationalist or an extreme far-right-wing group, had an intention to demonstrate here today against those people crossing the border irregularly. We understand that it's one of perhaps about seven such demonstrations planned across the country. And we felt it was important as local people to show that we didn't share their values, we didn't share their point of view, that we're not threatened by people crossing the border, that on the contrary, we understand why people are crossing irregularly and why people no longer feel safe in the United States.
In your group, Bridges Not Borders, mm-hmm. What sorts of solutions would you advocate for or call on the government to take for this problem?
Well, the first and most important thing, I think, in this point in time is that the Safe Third Country Agreement with the United States must be rescinded, because clearly the United States no longer can be considered a safe country for asylum seekers. And it's clear that they need to go somewhere, and Canada is the place to come. And we have the resources. We're a wealthy country. We take in relatively very few refugees compared to the vast movements of people around the world. We have the ability to take in many more.
It's Frances Ravensbergen. I'm with a local Hemingford group called Bridges Not Borders, and working today in solidarity with Solidarity Across Borders. Yeah.
Why was it important for you to come to this today?
Because it's shocking that there's a reaction from people in Canada that's anti-immigrant and that's racist. And it really scares me that there's groups like Storm Alliance that are kind of inciting people to say it's okay to be anti-people who are different in any way. And I think it's really important important that we stand up. When we live in Hemmingford, we have sort of this golden opportunity because it's happening like so close to our community. And so I just really felt pulled to become more active in the issue. And that's why we organized our little group and we got our little buttons going, and we're trying to do some educational work just to get people to understand that what's happening is not a huge crisis.
My name is Birgit. But I was born in Germany during the Second World War. And, of course, I know what happened, you know, with the Jewish population. And I feel that, you know, if people would have stood up at that time and say this is wrong, you know, all this would not, the Holocaust would not have happened. So I feel right now I have to stand up for what I feel is right and support refugees, you know, because you could see what happens when you don't stand up, you know, then the Holocaust happened. So that's why I'm here.
You are still listening to Groundwire, your source for community radio news from the grassroots. We will be right back after this.
Welcome back to Groundwire. New editions available bi-weekly online at www.groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station.
Now it's time for our community radio report, brought to us by Yaffa from CKUT Radio about the 2017 Grassroots Radio Conference. Yaffa spoke with several conference participants about their time at the GRC and their views on the role of community radio today.
What's your name?
Sherry Bailey.
What city and station do you come from?
I come from Portsmouth, Virginia, and my station, which is not on the air yet, but so hopefully within the next 30 days, is WJVA 106.5 FM.
My name's Otis McClay. I'm with the Pacifica Foundation, and I live in Bertram, Texas, which is outside Austin.
What is your name?
My name is Alicia Bacon. I am from Scottsdale, Arizona, but I'm with WCAA in Albany, New York.
My name is Jim Ellinger. I'm with Austin Airwaves in Austin, Texas.
Why are you attending the Grassroots Radio Conference?
I have been to many of the Grassroots Radio Conferences, the GRCs, over the years because I'm very involved in community media and community radio. The GRC conference is very fun. It's kind of small and inexpensive. It's not like a big national public radio or those sort of conferences. And I get to meet lots of my old radio friends and talk about community radio issues.
Why are you attending the Grassroots Radio Conference?
I'm a volunteer for the radio station that's hosting the event, and I thought it was very important to bring together all these people from different radio stations and connect to other community members.
Why are you attending the Grassroots Radio Conference?
I do a lot of work and I want to share it with people, work that helps radio stations do their job. And so I want to share it with people, and I want to get them to use my stuff. One of the real purposes of this whole Grassroots Conference is we get to meet all the people that we work with all the time, because we all work with people all over the country.
Why are you attending the Grassroots Radio Conference?
Well, this was my first opportunity to be able to interact with other people who are doing low-power FM radio stations, and I came up with from Virginia with Christopher Maxwell, who was our keynote speaker for this morning on Saturday, And my other big reason is that this is all new to me, but I do what I've been able to appreciate is that if I learn it, then I can help other people access and learn how to be a part of all of this movement here.
My last question is, what do you think the role of community radio is today?
I'm so excited because I think we can help direct communities in terms of getting the things that they want. We know that the majority of Americans certainly want gun control, and we should be able to make that happen. And we can do that in community radio. And we know that people want, you know, immigration to be fair. And we can do that by connecting ourselves together, and we become stronger and our voices get louder.
So what do you think the role of community radio is today?
Community radio allows people to speak for themselves and to themselves. Commercial radio, the only purpose for commercial radio is to deliver listeners to advertisers. Community radio delivers a service, a voice to the people.
What do you think the role of community radio is today?
I think that the role is quite expansive. One is to connect individuals in the city, and it gives people a voice to tell their stories, to share their opinions in a world where there's so much advertising and so much media coming from different directions. It gives the average person a chance to share how they think and what they feel. It also gives a voice to smaller organizations that don't agree with what's going on nationally and politically. And it helps connect community members together so we can feel more like a family. And it also allows for emergency situations for people to have access to what's going on and to help get help.
What do you think the role of community radio is today?
We are the people who put things that you won't hear anywhere else on radio. We're the people who do the news that you don't hear anywhere else on the big stations. We do local things because we're generally smaller stations and we're more part of a community. So we put that kind of thing on the air, things that you don't hear anywhere else. We're a really invisible and important part of society.
You can learn more about the 2017 Grassroots Radio Conference online at www.grassrootsradioconference.org.
And that's it for this edition of Groundwire, hosted by participants attending the Grassroots Radio Conference. Headlines this episode were written by Michael Welch and Omay Salma Rahamtula. We thank all of our contributors. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station, or download at www.groundwirenews.ca.